This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Deborah Becker.
Harvard University is joining schools across the nation in reviewing policies to prevent sexual assaults on campus. That's after the Harvard Crimson last month published an anonymous letter by a Harvard student saying that the university failed to take action when she was sexually assaulted.
The young woman alleges that Harvard told her that her assailant may not have technically violated the school's definition of sexual assault.
It's the latest case in what is a problem on college campuses nationwide. One in five college women is a survivor of sexual violence. A White House task force is looking into the issue and is expected to issue its first report later this month.
Joining us to talk more about sexual violence on campus and what's being done about it is Wendy Murphy. She's a professor at the New England Law School, and she joins us in the studio. Welcome to Radio Boston.
Good to be here.
Also on the phone with us is Laura Dunn. She's a survivor of campus sexual violence herself, and she works as a victim's advocate. Laura, welcome to you as well.
Thanks for having me on.
And listeners, we'd like to hear from you during this program. Did you read that article that was in the Harvard Crimson titled, "Harvard, Dear Harvard, You Win"? Or are you a victim of campus sexual assault? What can be done to deal with this issue and to deal with it more effectively? You can call us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at Radio Boston. Wendy, let's start with you. Let's talk about Harvard first in this anonymous letter describing a young woman not finding support from the university when she came forward alleging an act of sexual violence. And she's also one of a group of students who filed a federal complaint with the U.S. Education Department alleging that the school should do better in fighting sexual assaults. Is Harvard different from other schools, or is this, you know, describe the problem in broad terms for us and why we're hearing about this right now at Harvard?
So, Harvard isn't different. It's sad. I mean, I read the essay and I thought, how many of these have I read? Sexual assault on campus is huge. Calling it an epidemic, I think, is an understatement. Pandemic, perhaps even better. And it's gotten worse, not better, over the years as we've gained consciousness in larger society. In fact, women are more likely to be sexually assaulted if they go to college than in the real world. And they're even more likely to be sexually assaulted in college than in the military. And a lot of parents don't understand that. And, you know, it's not a well-known statistic. Part of the problem is simple male entitlement. And that's why, in my experience, the problem is worse at some of the elite schools than the D1s. The guys there are more entitled. There's more established entitlement, male entitlement. In some cases, the girls haven't even been allowed there for very long.
Even though there's more awareness,
because much of what we've done in terms of increased awareness has not been designed to truly prevent and send the right message. For example, the primary law against sexual violence on campus, Title IX, which everybody now understands deals with violence and civil rights violence in particular on campus, for a very long time, it's been around since 1972, for a very long time, it was misframed in society, thus profoundly misunderstood as a sports equity rule.
Right.
And yet, if you go back to 1964, women's civil rights, equal access to education, and in particular discrimination based on gender, the most severe expression of which is violence, has been covered by civil rights laws, but schools have never historically redressed violence on campus under civil rights laws. They treat it more like stealing a notebook. And so we've really watched the evolution of that problem and subjugation.
Let me just make sure I have it clear. So you're saying that because we're classifying this under Title IX, it's making schools sort of take more notice and people take more notice because there's federal funding.
Yes, and actually, let me be clear about that. It's not just that schools are taking more notice. It's really the only legal mechanism through which victims can hold schools accountable for inadequate redress. And the consciousness around Title IX really started to develop in the early 2000s, frankly, after I intentionally and strategically brought a case against Harvard undergraduate school. At the time, they adopted a new rule requiring students to produce independent corroboration. Only sexual assault victims had to produce independent corroboration, or they couldn't even get access to grievance procedures. Mm-hmm. And I was at the law school at the time as a visiting scholar and said to them, you can't do that. You can't treat the word of a woman as per se less valuable, less equal compared to the word of all these other students on campus. So I filed a complaint with the Department of Education's Office of Civil Rights here, and argued that it violated women's rights as a class. And the Office of Civil Rights opened the investigation and slapped Harvard back and said, you can't do that. They made them retract the policy. But why I tell you that is, it's important that it was against Harvard, because change trickles down. Systemic change in higher education trickles down. If you go after a school like Harvard or Princeton, against whom, by the way, I have pending investigations right now, as well as UVA, when you go after these elite schools and they get in trouble, all the other universities and colleges in the United States, they line up. But if you go after community college in the middle of nowhere, the higher echelon schools don't even notice. So once that happened, once Harvard got in trouble for violating women's rights under Title IX in the early 2000s for requiring corroboration, that really got a lot of press and students everywhere started
to notice.
I need to just
interrupt you a little bit here. Okay, let's just talk in somewhat general terms. Mm-hmm. In what this woman said in her editorial in the Harvard Crimson, and sort of looking at how schools, many schools are handling this, there is like an administrative board that looks into these allegations. Why not just send all of this to the police?
Well, it's not an either or. Both things should happen. I mean, crimes on campus are both civil rights violations against women on the basis of sex, thus covered by Title IX and Title IV of the Civil Rights Act of 1964, and also a felony crime. One of the things we have to be careful about is just because it's a rape on campus and thus might be prosecuted under criminal law standards in the real world, because you're going to take away someone's liberty if he's found guilty, The school standards are supposed to be different. They're supposed to be more generous. You're supposed to get a person in trouble for violating a human's civil rights on campus, because campus is a special place where equality matters and civil rights matter. So you're supposed to redress the harm there, not calling it the crime of rape, but rather an act of discrimination. And it's supposed to be redressed under very low standards by preponderance of the evidence. And you're supposed to get the offender in trouble if they cause harm to you based on sex and the harm was, or the touching or the conduct was, unwelcome or unwanted. Much lower burden of proof than what you'd have to prove in criminal court to have the man go to prison, for example. And we have schools everywhere, including Harvard to this day, requiring victims to prove criminal law standards in a civil rights environment on campus, and then saying, oh, well, you know, you didn't meet your burden of proof. You weren't credible enough. And here, it's always about money, right? So when a victim says, this happened to me, lots of schools say, we care about you. Here's some free counseling. Why don't you go move your dorm room? And of course, they tell the parents, we love and care about your daughter. Please keep sending the tuition dollars. But they say to the guy's parents, well, we don't believe her enough to punish him. So, of course, they keep getting his tuition dollars as well. It really is a perfect storm. If money is the motive behind why higher education generally doesn't do the right thing, if money is the motive, there's very little financial incentive for schools to rule in favor of and to credit the victim.
Okay. We should say that we did invite Harvard on the show today, but they declined to join us. They did release a statement saying that Harvard, as a university and a community, takes the issue of sexual harassment and sexual violence extremely seriously. In recent years, they have created the Office of Sexual Assault Prevention and Response and taken other steps toward implementing a new university policy. So we should say that Harvard did decline to speak with us today. But right now, I'd like to go to Laura Dunn. Laura, you're with us on the line. Is that right?
Yes, I'm still here.
Okay, great. And you're an advocate for victims of sexual assault and a survivor of campus sexual violence. What happened in your case?
I was sexually assaulted over 10 years ago at the University of Wisconsin. And like many survivors, I chose to stay silent at first until I learned that the university had its own process. I wasn't given that information for over a year. But once I knew, I actually went right into the dean's office. I reported the day that I found out. And through their encouragement, I also reported to the police. So just as Wendy pointed out, I did the dual roads, criminal and on campus, because I didn't want to see the men who had harmed me, because two men had raped me. Neither process gave me justice at all, and I ended up filing a Title IX complaint against the University of Wisconsin. And that did not go my way. That was before the Dear Colleague letter that the Department of Education released in 2011. And before that time, actually, the Department of Education was very lax in its enforcement of the laws. And because of my case and cases just like mine across the country, we started gaining some national attention. The department paid attention to our needs, and they made that guidance and they released it. And so now there's been a wave of Title IX complaints because the federal government started to pay attention and create more rights for survivors.
Okay, and that Dear Colleague letter was the letter that you're referring to was when the Department of Education said that it was going to take these complaints seriously under Title IX as potential violations.
Absolutely.
Okay, so let's just make sure that we have this clear. You didn't realize that there was a policy for you to go forward with your complaint. About a year after the incident happened was when you did go forward to university officials and to the police.
Yes, that is correct. And, you know, my story is not unlike many other survivors who are unaware of their rights both on campus and under federal laws.
Mm-hmm. What happened when you brought it forward to the University of Wisconsin?
At first, they were very accommodating. They said, you know, we're glad that you're reporting. It's not your fault. We're going to help you. And they did a lot of what even was seen in the Harvard letter. They're willing to offer me emotional support, but they weren't actually willing to assist me with accommodations in classes when I was having a tough time. They weren't actually willing to enforce their policies so that there was a consequence to the male student. And I started to pick up on that pretty fast after a month or so. And they started to push back and demand for more, and it went from, we're ready to support you, it's not your fault, to, this is your fault, you were drinking, you brought this on yourself, and you're not going to get justice. And that's actually when I went to the media, and that's a move that many other survivors are doing now. They're taking their stories to the public and saying, hey, this is what's happening on college campuses, here's my name, here's my face, here's my story. Let's demand change together because no one should have to go through this on college campus.
Were there any consequences at all against the two men that you accused of sexual assault?
No. Unfortunately, by the time that I reported, given the lack of information that I had, one of them had already graduated. The other one was still on campus, and he was given a no-contact directive, which he broke. He threatened me in public in front of other students. It was never investigated. There was never a consequence. And by the time they decided, the university dragged its feet on the investigation, they waited a whole year. By the end of that school year, they said, well, we didn't find enough information, so we told him he's off the hook, and by the way, there's no process for you left. And I tried to make an appeal process. And because of all these negative experiences I had on campus, I worked really hard with a lot of national advocates this last year to help pass the Campus Save Act. Title IX isn't the only tool on campus. The Campus Save Act actually now gives fines to universities of $35,000 for violating victims' rights under its act. So thankfully, all these negative experiences have turned into more national change.
All right. Listeners, we'd like to hear from you as well. Do you think that it is a pandemic right now on college campuses across the country, that sexual assaults are a huge problem, and what should be done about it? You can call us at 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at Radio Boston. We are joined now by John, who's calling from Medford. John, you're on the air.
Yes, hi. Thank you for... this very important topic. It's an issue that I've been working on for more than 20 years in Massachusetts, and I did want to bring to the attention discussion and hearings that we've had over the last few years regarding the lack of transparency at Harvard and really all of the private colleges and universities in Massachusetts who do not have the oversight and do not work with the Crimson, most importantly, as an example, in providing any kind of detailed crime reports just on college crime at all private colleges and universities and campuses. And that's an effort and a blockage in the Massachusetts House of Representatives of a bill that would do just that, make the oversight the same as the public colleges and universities currently are oversighted. A bill endorsed by the Boston Area Rape Crisis Center, the Secretary of State Bill Galvin, the national group Security on Campus that I think.
And this bill that you're talking about would give the same reporting requirements to private universities as currently exist with public universities.
Yes.
Well,
and who do you think has led the opposition to that through sort of a front group, the Association of Independent Colleges and Universities of Massachusetts, but Harvard University, who have a very different view on that responsibility that, by the way, Yale in Connecticut completely came around to a couple years ago, saying we're not going to fight this kind of dumb fight anymore. But Harvard doesn't view it as a dumb fight. Harvard views this information as private, and they do not want the intervention.
Okay, John, let's let Wendy address that for a moment. Wendy?
Yeah.
Is there a different standard for public and private universities?
Well, I think he's talking about access to quote-unquote public information or the quote-unquote public records laws applicability to private schools. He's absolutely right. The SJC gives Harvard permission to keep information private. It doesn't apply to public schools. But here's the other thing. I mean, higher ed, obviously, in general, and elite schools in particular, have a very powerful urge to keep scandals quiet because they think parents will be willing to send all the, their children and all their money there if they think their daughters are safe there. But what we really have is a problem with undercounting that is legitimized by a variety of laws. And Harvard has been very good at causing false low numbers to come out at their school for a long, long time. When I mentioned earlier the corroboration rule, it was pretty clear to me by requiring corroboration, they believed that they could decline to count those cases that didn't have the corroboration, and most rape cases have no corroboration, so they could pretend those things became invisible and their numbers are artificially low, and I think continue to be artificially low. Nevertheless, the Campus Save Act, which some people say is such a good thing, and is it really not such a good thing, is currently the target of a federal lawsuit because of the ways in which it allows schools to disproportionately subject the redress of civil rights violence on campus to worse legal standards compared to all other civil rights violence. But what it also does, and the public doesn't know this, it literally allows schools not to count incidents that are not reported. That has never been true in the history of this country. So
okay,
we're going to see,
got a few minutes,
we're
so
gonna see
have
very low
you.
Numbers, but they're going to be fake numbers because of the Campus Save
okay,
Act.
Okay. But here's something that, that Laura mentioned and that has come up in a lot of these stories, and it's drinking. It's alcohol. Right. Now, alcohol is involved, and of course, that clouds everything. But also, how do you create a process and make sure that it's fair? Because some of the numbers that I've seen suggest that about 3% of men on college campuses commit more than 90% of the rapes.
Yep.
So if you're talking about 3% of the men and alcohol is involved and everything gets a little blurry, how do you make sure that you have a fair process to make sure if someone is accused, that they're fairly accused and dealt with fairly?
Well, you have to
I would like to address that, actually.
Oh, okay.
So the Campus Save Act does a lot of great things. It actually does require reporting of campus crimes, but beyond that, it actually has set a standard when dealing with different hearings involving the accused and the accuser, and it actually creates just the same process that Title IX has already required, an equal process. Both individuals are supported in the process. Both of them have rights as far as what information they're entitled to, their ability to respond. When alcohol is involved, that doesn't mean, someone's not intentionally committing a crime at all, and that's actually the research you mentioned. Dr. Lesaks says 6 to 12% of individuals are committing serial perpetration, and they're not doing it because of miscommunication or misunderstanding. They're actually predatory.
Okay,
they're using it because they know people can't resist them and are unable to give consent.
We just have a little bit of time left. I understand that this is a difficult issue, but Mary Coachella, who is with the Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault Program for the District Attorney's Office in Western Massachusetts, is actually working on programs. We only have about a minute left, so I'd just like her to tell us a little bit about what's happening in Western Mass with a consortium of colleges out there to try to prevent sexual assaults on campus. Mary, are you there?
I am here. I have 1 minute.
I'm sorry. Yes, I'm
okay.
Sorry.
I just wanted to be clear. Well, yeah, so basically what we tried to do is a prevention campaign that's directed at bystander intervention for students to really help them to see some of the things that they could do to support each other and to help each other when they see a potential for sexual assault occurring. And so we have PSAs and both bus ads that we did in collaboration with the University of Massachusetts, and a lot of the information is on our website.
Are these effective? How do you know that these are effective, Mary?
The campaign is very new. So we really have not had a chance to evaluate, but we did have students with us all along in the process. And so they helped us to write the scripts. They helped. We hired a media consultant to create the theme and the logo. And now we're entering into the process of, you know, really distributing and launching the campaign on the campuses. And part of that will be to evaluate, you know, any impact it may be having.
If I could just add, you know, education is important. By my experience, it's not just alcohol, it's increasingly rape drugs that cause not only incapacitation, but utter lack of memory. And boy, there's nothing better for a perpetrator when a victim tries to report but can't remember what happened. What we really need is to teach respect for personal autonomy, that if you don't know somebody has full consciousness, full capability to consent, back off.
All right. Wendy Murphy, she's a professor at New England Law School. Wendy, thanks for being with us.
My pleasure.
Also joining us today, Laura Dunn. She's an advocate for victims of sexual assault. And Mary Coachella, she's the Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault Programs Director for the District Attorney in Western Massachusetts. Thanks to all of you. Stay with us. There's more Radio Boston ahead. I'm Deborah Becker with Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston.